the regular meeting of the Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project Governance Committee of Wednesday, March 20th, and let the minutes know that, that all parties are represented and that the Water Management District is represented by alternate Jeannie Byrne. And Jeannie, would you lead us in the pledge of allegiance, please?
Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will now turn to the public comment period, and this is the opportunity for any member of the public to address the Governance Committee on any item not on tonight's agenda. For anyone who wishes to speak, seeing no one, we will close the public comment period, and we will turn to agenda item one, which is approved minutes from our first committee meeting. And thank you, Arlene, for producing these and passing them out. Has everyone had a chance to review them? I know they've
been. I did. They seem damn good.
Our desk just today, but I'll, any member of the public wish to address the minutes? Seeing no one, we will
move approval.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Callan, get a vote on minutes.
You don't know, we'll have to check the contract on that.
All right.
Well, go ahead.
For the record, though, I support the minutes.
Passes unanimously for all members who have a vote. We'll move to item two, which is review and provide recommendations for design build requests for qualifications prepared by California American Water. This is the same item that was discussed at last week's meeting, and since last week, California American Water has provided the full document. And I don't know, Rob, if you or someone else wants to go through that document.
Anthony's going to speak to that.
Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anthony Sarasulo. I'm the Vice President of Legal for California American Water. You may have seen the draft request for qualifications that we provided on Monday of this week to the committee and for public review. Going to go over this kind of high level, and then we can open up to questions and comments. Basically, the procurement process we're going to use for this this project is two-stage. It's the request for qualifications first, followed by the request for proposals. And at the RFQ stage, Rich has a list of interested parties who have shown interest in the project over the past few months or years. Our plan is to issue the document when final to them on or about April 1st. And we're also going to have a public notification of some sort, so that anyone who doesn't know that we're issuing this document will hopefully hear about it. Each design build entity, as we defined it here, will be asked to submit a form, which is attached here, basically indicating, hey, we're interested, here's our proposal manager, here's the point of contact, and we'll get those in, we'll collect them, and then we're off and running in the process. The request for qualifications document typically is looking at the experience and qualifications of the potential teams and the players that are out there. We're not really focused on this project per se. The RFP basically will ask, okay, what's your approach for this project? How do you propose to solve the issues that we're facing? And what's your price to do that? Again, phase two, we'll get into that in the schedule here a little bit. The actual document, I'll do a quick page turn here just to highlight. We have an introduction highlighting what the project's about to give the potential proposers an idea of what's going on here to the extent they don't already know. There's reference to a project budget estimate, as Rich and his team have deemed appropriate here, of $70 to $100 million. And there's reference to our website where they can go and find out additional information, including a copy of the Governance Committee agreement and other relevant documents. We roll into section two here, utilization for women, minority, disabled, veteran-owned businesses, as well as local contractors and suppliers, which is something that was raised last week at this committee's meeting, and we incorporated that here. Section three gets into a little more specifics about the project, the background, what we anticipate the physical project to look like here. And kind of touches on the various aspects of that, the desal process, brine storage, et cetera. Section 4 is the schedule. And as we propose now, you'll see here the RFQ issuance on April 1st with a few key dates in during the process, a briefing call, any written questions that the potential proposers may have about the process, and then answers issued by Callahan, with the SOQs due May 1st, SOQs being statements of qualification, and then we anticipate notifying all the teams who submitted their SOQs and the public of those firms we've selected to receive the RFP, and that's the shortlisted set of teams, of which we anticipate there being 4. And we will make that notification on May 31st. And then we roll into the RFP process with issuance in June of the RFP. You can see all the subsets there of different dates. When we issue the draft RFP, we're going to issue the draft design build contract as well, at least the main body of it. A lot of the technical stuff you can't issue at that time because that's what the proposers will be proposing on. But the main body of the contract will be there. And you see the process as it plays out over several months, with proposals due mid-September, so it's roughly a 3-month proposal time frame. We would plan to conduct interviews late September, early October, select a preferred proposer shortly after the interviews, and then come back to this committee with the final contract and all the proposals for recommendation about October 21st is our targeted date. Allowing for the process to play out at the governance committee, we anticipate agreement execution sometime in mid-November. So that's the schedule as we've laid it out here. Section 5 gets into the submission requirements and instructions for the proposers to follow. And basically this covers a lot of the forms that we've attached here that need to be completed by the prospective proposers, including all their background information, who, you know, what their team looks like, what's their corporate structure, representations about their licensure, financial information to make sure that they have the financial strength to do this project, as well as information about safety requirements, insurance, and history on their other projects as well. You know, have you had any issues? Have you had any lawsuits? Have there been claims against you? Have you had bonds called? Have you received any notices of violation? Basically, as much information as we can get about them going back 10 years. We're looking at anything since January of 2003. And we ask them to provide information about that. We also ask them to provide reference projects and reference individuals that we will follow up and kind of make calls and inquiries and investigations into the information they provided to us to make sure it's supported by others. So that kind of rolls through Section 5. Then we get to Section 6, the selection criteria. And basically we broke down the selection here into two aspects along the lines of what I said earlier, basically your technical qualifications and your financial qualifications. And we allotted a point breakout on that of 70% for 70 points for the technical and 30 points for the financial qualifications. And you can see here we have a subset of the technical qualifications that we look at. And it's basically kind of a summary of all the information we're asking for in this document. And then Section 7 just gets into rules and reservation of rights and those types of boilerplate issues that we see in these types of documents. And then we get into the forms that I referenced, which is basically asking for all of the information that we've outlined in the main body of the RFQ. That's about what's here.
Could you cover the issue of no contact and,
Sure.
Something we did not discuss at the last meeting, but I think it's important to talk about.
We did not discuss it. I'm trying to find exactly where it is in the document here. Basically, CalAM has a requirement, as most public entities do as well, when they're conducting a competitive procurement, that there's to be no contact with any officer of the company, in the company's case, officer of the company or employee. We have a designated point of contact, who in this case is Lori Gerard, corporate counsel for CalAM. In speaking with counsel for, be careful here, I think it's counsel for RWA, but advised the committee as a whole, Russ McLaughlin, we thought it best that we impose the same rules on the public with respect to the entities that make up this governance committee. So there's a directive in here that any potential proposer cannot discuss this project with any of your respective entities.
No schmoozing clause.
No schmoozing clause, exactly.
Go beyond just the governance committee, but any of the required permitting agencies?
No, you meant, I'm sorry, let me, I answered too quickly. You said beyond this governance committee, goes beyond the representatives here, but it covers all supervisors or board members of the respective entities, as well as employees, staff, et cetera.
And in our case, TAC members, so those aren't employees or staff. Our technical advisory committee members have been advised that they are included within this.
What section is that, just so we all?
I was looking for it a moment.
Well, Exhibit D, no, sorry, that's a separate issue, sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's towards the front, top of page 9.
That's correct, thank you. In the declaration section, it's in top of page 9 in the 5.1 instructions.
So would you like us to include the TAC in there, TAC members? Would that be helpful, or do we need not to worry about that?
Don Freeman's already advised the TAC members, but I think we should, for sake of completeness. Well, it says representative. I don't know whether a TAC member would be judged to be a.
Okay, well, why don't we work that out offline with the attorneys?
Would there be a need for this potential, any of the potential bidders to contact a permitting agency to find out what permits they might need to be obtaining? And you wouldn't want to have that as a competitive thing.
With the county being a permitting agency?
Any of the permitting agencies.
Typically, we have not precluded people from contacting any permitting agencies because that lets them learn about the project that's
right.
Needed.
That's what I was saying.
But you're right, for the county, that's a little tough because you provide some of the permits here. And I think if it's a question about permits, that's okay. If it's a question about, hey, what do you like in a firm, that's different.
How can I get this contract?
or who are the other teams?
Well, we can make an exception to the extent they're contacting an agency with respect to permitting requirements for the project.
Yeah. I guess that would only apply to the county. I mean, we might be able to be that specific.
Water management district.
Could be.
It would be county applying issue.
They're not perfect.
Water distribution system.
Okay, so let's first see if there's any questions for Anthony from the committee members.
So who's involved in on your team from the reviewing process? I mean, you know, you've got management and you got techies. Well, what does that team look like?
So we have 4 individuals that we have named to participate on the selection committee. I am not one of them. Anthony is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
There is a technical individual, finance person, and an operations person. So there are 4 individuals that we've named to be part of this. And those individuals will also not be able to discuss this with anybody inside the company.
With
the exception of Lori Gerard, who is kind of the attorney managing the process.
And what level of experience, you know, order of magnitude have they had in this big project?
Yeah.
Million. If we were specific, you had to have desal experience if you wanted to play. What's your team got?
So those people, for example, the operations person, I don't want to necessarily name names, but he has.
They're just recently released from federal prison.
He has a breadth of experience in design building and in memory treatment. So he's.
He's a reverse osmosis guy.
Yeah, desal experience. All you know, on the financial side, it's one of our top financial individuals. Of course, Anthony, as you know, for those that don't know, Anthony used to work for an outside law firm that did procurements like this, so he's very experienced in the procurement process. The engineer on the selection committee is Rich. So most of you know Rich's experience and background, and So that's kind of the four folks on the team.
I guess my only other question is just your level of comfort with this timeline. It's pretty compressed, which I don't dislike. I mean, I think it's actually given a good thing, but I mean, if you saw calendar slippage anywhere, do you have anywhere where you have a concern?
I think that always the toughest part with these kind of procurements is the working through the draft RFP with the and draft contract with the vendors to make sure that we get all of them to bid the project. Sometimes when you get into this stuff, there's usually a firm that says, well, I'm not sure I can accept this liability requirement or these guarantees, or I'm not sure we want to put this much of our balance sheet at risk, and so you end up having those discussions. That's usually the place where it can be the most difficult. But for a procurement of this size, this is a reasonable schedule. We've had some discussions with some of the potential bidders and just said, is this a reasonable schedule? We've had all the indications are yes, this is a reasonable schedule. So I think it's workable. We're mindful that if you rush it too much, that can impact the cost. So we think this is a good schedule.
So obviously this is ahead of actually having the project fully approved, so
right.
These are also going to be people that will sit on this, be available when the project comes around?
Yeah, that will all be covered in the RFP. They'll have to, and we've talked about this. In fact, this is in the governance agreement that we have. Of course, there will be different phases of this project, so the construction will require a separate notice to proceed, the design will require a notice to proceed, and so they will there may be some stuff that we ask them to do immediately, but we will not be spending a large amount of dollars until after the commission approval process.
I think that Rich at our TAC meeting on Monday mentioned that there is some question as to the PUC was previously planning on finalizing the EIR in the late this year and then issuing the CPCN early next year. But there is some talk that they may hold off finalizing the EIR until the issuance of the CPC. And can you talk about how that may affect this schedule?
Well, I don't know where that rumor originated from, but I mean, the schedule is the schedule at this point that we're working on. So we'd like to be ready in the event that they come and finish the EIR in November. If they don't, I guess we'd have a little more play in the schedule.
Rob, if I can just add to that?
Yeah.
I would anticipate the contract will be ready to go by mid-November, and if the EIR takes a little longer to be certified, we would probably wait until that certification and then sign it immediately thereafter.
Okay.
I think that we may have to do it that way.
Okay. But so we work to stick to this schedule, and then if the EIR is delayed, we're just in a holding pattern, but it's better to be in a holding pattern than not be ready.
I think so, yeah.
Other questions? Well, I appreciate the local hire issue that you put in there, but one of the problems with that has been, from a contractor standpoint, is bonding requirements and fiscal standing has been such that a lot of smaller contractors can't meet that bonding threshold. So I would hope that those expectations would be proportional to the amount of work that was being done, not one generic capacity across the entire subcontracting world.
Well, we're asking for bonds from the DB entity itself, the entity we're contracting with. As far as whatever bonding requirements they have of their subs, that's between those entities. So we're not going to be looking at the bonding requirements.
Of subs.
Right.
Okay. Well, you'd still be able to see it, though.
You would certainly want to have some requirement for the smaller subs to be bonded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but as far as the levels, it's going to be proportionate to their work.
But there would be a requirement for them to be bonded.
Sure.
But if you put that bonding
level so high that you can't qualify because you don't have the financial capability, it's a great way to eliminate the local smaller guys and go with a larger firm out of the area.
Okay.
I had a couple questions. Anthony, you mentioned going back to 2003 in terms of looking at experience and track record, but then in certain places it goes back to 2008.
Yeah, and I meant to make this statement up front. I apologize for forgetting to do so. It's still a working draft. We have some cleanup to do. That is one of the, you know, if you saw my copy, I have some red lines all over this version. But we wanted to get this to you Monday so it could be circulated to the public. It's not final yet, so we're working on that. We have another internal draft, and we're going to clean up all those items over the next.
But at least your current thinking is that in all cases it would go back to 2003.
Yes, it'll go back 10 years.
Okay, thank you. This is maybe more a comment than a question, but on the ineligible firms, I think you list separation, SPI, Separation Processes Incorporated, mm-hmm. and I think that Chris Helm would fall into that same category. So you either include them all, you know. And then I had doing a crosswalk with some of the comments that we offered both at the Water Authority meeting and at the previous Governance Committee meeting. I didn't see, and I may have just missed it, but there is a desire to see previous compliance with environmental and labor laws. Maybe I missed it.
7.3.
Okay.
Well, that's Cal OSHA, that's safety.
Yeah, I saw.
7.4 would,
I think it's some
which is state, federal, local law would incorporate a lot of that, I believe.
In some of the tables in the back where we ask contractors to describe their specific projects, we have specific things that they have to talk about. You know, original contract price, final contract price, reason for claims, any NOVs that were issued for any reason, any violations that were given under. So it's a bullet item on the things that we discussed about the previous projects.
Okay, it was one of three things that the Water Authority offered as comments, so I do want to make sure that we...
Environmental laws and any labor laws.
The labor laws specifically.
Okay.
I think that I had suggested the environmental laws at the previous Governance Committee meeting, but in terms of the Water Authority, when they looked at the labor.
Just one question of kind of procedure here, maybe for the attorneys. Is this Governance Committee required to come back with Cal Am on comments, or can we just take them here at the meeting and incorporate them, or is there, I'm just trying to recall what the agreement says about the formality of the law.
I think that what would probably be most helpful is if at the end we have a motion that we, you know, accept this, maybe with certain comments or additions, and that is our recommendation.
Okay.
And then under the agreement, you can choose to follow the recommendation or not.
Okay.
And if you don't, then you are to provide us a written explanation within the period of time.
Okay.
That's my understanding of how the agreement works, but there's other, well, I'm not a lawyer, there's lots of lawyers.
But you can read, right?
I can, generally. Yeah.
I guess the only question I have, and again, maybe Charles or John can help me here, is whether or not the committee has to submit something in writing to us that as to what the recommendations are. In other words, if we're responding in writing,
right,
we need to work off of something that
so if we pass a motion, we'll have minutes and we'll get you those minutes.
I think there's supposed to be that kind of communication back from the committee directly.
Right.
Okay.
More than the minutes or just the minutes?
No, there's nothing in the agreement that actually requires us to submit something to you in writing. It's more or less what we read in the minutes, and then we hope that you would respond only if you're not going to cooperate.
Okay.
Yeah,
I thought there was something, though, in there about...
We don't need to create extra work for everybody if
right.
we don't have to.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I thought there was something in about that. Or Dave's staff is going to take the whatever the motion was and put it into.
They will do that, right.
Send it out.
That's right, they will do that, but there's nothing extraordinary.
Right.
Above that.
The other, but the Water Authority is, as I think Cal-Am knows, there is an observation that we may not be all that interested in LEED for LEED's sake.
Yeah.
But insofar as it is, promotes energy efficiency, that will reduce the costs ultimately to ratepayers.
Well, I had, that was one of my comments, that instead of saying LEED certified facilities, it should be sustainable and green design facilities, because you do not want to lock yourself into the cost of LEED.
Yeah,
and there's several places that it shows up.
Okay.
And so, at the least, if they chose to do a LEED project, the cost of the paperwork for LEED should not go to ratepayers.
Yeah, it sounds like we've all had similar experiences with with LEED. The next item was a suggestion of, and maybe this is more in the RFP than the RFQ, but looking at the experience that design build firms have had with designing plants that have a high level of, I don't know if this is the right word, maintainability, that they're cost effective to maintain, and a high level of adaptability to new technologies. So I think, to the extent it does fit in the RFQ, it would be, what is your experience with designing firms, with designing plants that have both of those attributes? And then I thought that we talked last time about the number of change orders that were design build firm initiated as opposed to owner initiated in previous projects. And is that in here?
No, in fact, that's one of my notes going back to last week that didn't make it into this draft, so I have it here to get it in into the next version.
And then the sixth thing that I had was the responsiveness of the design build firm after the project completion and handoff, if there's some issue that comes up. What is their experience, what is their history with being responsive to other owners in a design build arrangement?
Yep, have it on my list.
Okay. So those were the six, just from my notes from previous meetings. And
Well, I just have one more comment, not to beat this up, but on the bonding, I think it's really critical that the subcontractors be bonded to whatever the limit of their work is. And I realize, you know, Dave has concern about knocking out some of the smaller guys. In the current economy, people tend to be bidding things that are above their level. And the Carmel High School Performing Arts Center was a classic example of that. And
I guess,
so you just want to make sure
let's talk about that from a legal perspective for a second, because I'm not sure that is important to us, because the guarantee will come from the entity that we're contracting with, the design builder. So how they handle their subs is their problem. And if they choose to require them to do certain bonding or not, they're accountable for delivering. So let's say they have a sub that goes bankrupt in the middle of the process, which has happened to me on projects. It's their responsibility to pick that up, and it's not a change order for us.
Good.
They have to deal with
that. That's great.
They're accountable to deliver what they bid to. And so in here, one of the major components of a design build project is this guarantee. There will be one entity guaranteeing the performance of the entire project. Even though that entity may not be responsible for all the components, they have to put their balance sheet at risk and step up and deal with all of that. And then they will work internally. And in these types of arrangements, there are many different structures that could occur between the prime. They could have a joint venture. It could be one entity. The contractor could be the prime. Could be that the engineer is the prime contractor. But they will work together to determine how they basically download that accountability to each other. And we generally, you know, when we look at the industry, we generally don't see the owner getting in the way of that, because we want that creativity to happen on the team. We're just concerned about the accountability at the top end so that we get what we need. But that's kind of my experience with that.
But in the end, you want to make sure that because of some twist in the economy, which has happened previously, you don't take down the whole team.
Sure.
So that's why there would be concern about having subcontractors be bonded. And certainly for the amount of the work they're doing, because this is not chicken feed we're talking about.
Sure. So the major you'll see in here, there's discussion of, we want to know who the major players are on their team. The contractor who's going to build it, the prime contractor, the engineer, the engineer of record. We want to see that stuff. But let's say that there's somebody who's going to pour the concrete. Maybe at this point that's not that important. If the concrete contractor, they have to change out that entity through the process, it's not going to take the job down. So at this stage in the game, usually what we see is the firms, you're trying to specify the major building blocks of the process, and that's who you're evaluating at this stage. Subsequently, we may go further down at the RFP stage, but a lot of the firms at this point probably haven't even selected who they would be using for all of those smaller pieces, because they actually don't know exactly what we're asking for yet. So so they might not have done that. They certainly at this stage, people are, they're trying to put their major players together in teams, and that's what we'll be evaluating at this stage.
And maybe it comes up then again as a discussion point, certainly in the RFP.
The next go around, probably,
Okay, I want to pick up the public comment if there's any other questions.
So point of clarification first. So Jeannie suggested change to sustainable and green, and your six suggested changes would be in the recommendation that we're making to CalAM for changes that we would need to transmit to CalAM?
We'll see what the committee agrees to, but I think that's probably the direction we're I've been taking.
Okay, so we may need an email or two to Arlene to clarify.
I will.
But I wrote down here sustainable green design. That's what
and they can choose.
I will be instructing Anthony to incorporate into the document.
Yeah, I think on Monday too, I don't know if it came from you, Richard, it came from somebody on our side of the TAC, but if you build the California Building Code, you're basically building to silver, lead silver anyway.
Did Bill say that?
That was from Bill, maybe? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah,
that's
not right. But you don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, Jeannie had an experience of the $2.1 million project.
$2.2,
where 20% of it was paper for LEED certification. So I have one comment, and I know you're still working through stylistically, but just as an example, if you go to page 8, 9, and 11, this is really style, not substance. So your heading 5.0 and 5.1 and throughout 5.21, you're using Times Roman. But your heading 5.2 on page 9 is different. And then you get to the heading on page 12, 5.3.2 is not bold, and 5.1 is underlined.
We'll make it all pretty and consistent.
Yes.
Dave just showing that he read the document.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, that's important, because otherwise you start thinking that you're still in the previous section.
Okay.
I'm on the aesthetics.
I've been nominated. Bill.
Actually, I had the same comment Dave did about the numbering. I in bold and underlined, and after a while, I just gave up. I just kind of read the narrative and didn't look at it anymore. So anyway, I had a few, and these are minor. This is, overall, it's actually quite good, and I thank you for putting in early on the information about the local hire and the plan for local hire and local subs and local vendors and material suppliers and the like. Looking at page 7 of 22, the power supply. You talk about taking power off the grid. Recently, the authorities had some discussions with the Waste Management District about the utilization of landfill gas. I would recommend that get a mention.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good add.
In here somewhere? Okay. The and then on page 9 of 22, I noticed that right after the due time and date, we've got a 25-page limit plus the appendix, which is all the forms. that's a really good idea, but please, I used to be on the other side of this when I was with Brown and Root, and the question always came up, is a page one side of a sheet or both sides of a sheet? Because I would write to to 25 fronts and somebody else would subvert me with a 50-page proposal. Okay, so that was some other firm.
We have to specify single-sided or double-sided.
It sounds very trivial, but you're going to get 25s and 50s if that's what you say. Okay. You'll get both.
Well, we like to save paper, so we'll go with double-sided.
And the guy that turned in the 25 is going to be irritated with it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
About font size?
Say size 6 font. So should we do 15 double-sided, or okay with 25 double-sided? What are we thinking?
15 works better for the
15 double-sided pages.
Yeah. When I was with Brown and Root, I learned all these little tricks. Okay. The SOQ evaluation team, Supervisor Potter inquired about, and thank you for that response. My question is, I'm probably going to reveal my own naivete here. Would it be wise or prudent to have a non-voting public member on the selection team?
We did discuss that quite a bit in the formulation of the governance committee. And I think one of the challenges that we had was, how can we prevent, or how can we maintain confidentiality of the process if we were to do that? And I think that was the stumbling block. We're not opposed to it. I think at CalEM, if there was somebody on that we could find to come on, I don't think we would want just a member of the general public. We would want somebody who has experience with this kind of thing. But I would maybe throw it back to Don and others to say, how can we do that, but also protect the process?
Get some sort of non-disclosure room.
Maybe non-disclosure room.
We talked about that. We
don't like that idea. Huh?
And the idea was it was going to be very difficult to do a non-disclosure agreement because of our past experience, and rather than go down that road, we thought this would be the better approach. Because even if we put a member of the governance committee or one of the other agencies, a member of the public, well, absent a member of the public, what it would be is they would have to report to their body as well. And thus, there could be a problem with the confidentiality. So, and we spent a lot of time on that one issue in talking this through. So our recommendation was just the way it's worded to kind of go forward.
Yeah. And I'll note that Category B2 of the governance agreement does cover prior to execution of any contract. The governance committee would not be involved in the selection of the four firms that come out of the RFQ, but we would be involved in the RFP selection process, so ultimately making that the selection of the final firm. So I don't actually remember why we decided to not be involved in the RFQ side, but to be involved in the RFP side. But we do, Category B2 does speak to how we will handle that process.
Well, if I could just clarify, and I'd like Don Charles to weigh in here. My understanding of the agreement is slightly different, that the committee will be involved before the contract is signed, but it's at the end of the process. So in other words, when we shortlist the firms and they receive the proposals and we're conducting meetings with them as spelled out in here to discuss the technical aspects of the project, the legal and contractual aspects, it's just CalAM doing that. In other words, we don't have that other party involved in the process. And similarly, when we select the preferred proposer, again, and negotiate the contract, again, the way the governance committee agreement is structured, as I understand it, please correct me if I'm wrong, it's still CalAM only until we've negotiated the document, preserving confidentiality and a competitive process. Do we then follow B2 and take it all to this committee?
That is correct. That is correct.
So we will see, it specifies that we will see a copy of all responsive bids, so that's three or four bids.
Yeah.
We'll be able to, Callahan will describe the process that it went through. And I think that that provides some level of comfort to the public. I think that's why we included it, that we'll have assurance that this was done the right way. But right, you're correct. We won't have a seat at the table throughout the full process.
Okay, just a couple more. On page 18 of 22, there's a numerical listing of the design build entity's response. And I'd like to suggest adding a number 8. How's the design build entity address issues of local hire? That kind of puts some meat in the kind of the generalized statement up front in the solicitation about the local hire plan. And what you will get is some kind of little outline of a local hire plan. And that same comment then would pertain to the selection criteria where I, on 6.0, and again, the numbers don't line up exactly on page 19 of 22. There's a bunch of bullets there. Mayor Burnett mentioned new technology and adaptability. In other words, the facility has to lend itself to emerging technology particularly in RO. And I still remember when you guys built the plant at Moss Landing, and I don't know how many times the RO units were changed, but it was more than months because the technology was changing so fast it was hard to do your own pilot plant, you know, with just the RO filters. And there's other kinds of things as well. And adaptability. And once again, I would suggest adding a bullet there for local hire. Should be up kind of with the same bullets that says DB or DBO experience, local hire experience.
Sorry, Bill, that's on page
19 of 22. There's a bunch of bullets in the middle of that page under paragraph 6, selection criteria. Mm-hmm.
So we would probably, if you want to do that, we would probably want to include the diverse procurement as well together, because we're putting those together.
The what procurement?
The diverse procurement.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just on the adaptability, given that they're not designing anything yet, it's going to be hard for them to. Maybe we could ask them about their experience.
Their experience
with that
in doing that. Yeah.
In other facilities.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you done with your?
That was it. Now I have to, just per our conversation earlier this afternoon, I haven't spent a whole lot of time with all these exhibits. They looked okay because we just got this thing here a couple of days ago. So I spent most of my time with the meat of it. Generally, it's pretty well done, in my opinion.
Other public comments at this point? Yeah.
Doug Wilhelm. I thought it was very well done, too. I have 3 points, all of which may be minor, at least at this stage. Before I make my comment, I want to preface this by saying 20 years ago, I was involved in responsible for a project that has a lot of parallels with this project. And it ran into problems after the go was given and things started coming on the site. And it ended up over a period, a total of 1 year of delay in the project. And the costs just kill you when that's happening, and then you start losing people that the companies have assigned because you don't have any work for them, so they assign you them to something else. And I think that you've got a significant or some risk of that kind of a problem occurring here, perhaps from external forces, but for it occurring. And I don't have any great ideas, but perhaps at the early stage with a contractor, you can minimize the problems just by having an open discussion with him on what he would propose doing under those events. The next is, I'm showing my ignorance, but you indicated a 21.5% participation goal of women, minority, and disabled-owned businesses. That's a pretty precise number. Where does that come from?
That comes from legislation from the state of California required on utilities in the state of California. So it's a rule for utilities regulated by the California Public Utilities Commission.
Yeah, the T is disadvantaged, not disabled.
Yeah,
so that would include minority representation,
yeah.
People of color.
Yeah.
It's a much broader thing.
Yeah. Okay. And then the final thought I had was, this is basically a design and build agreement, heading toward that. Is there any thought in place to how you then segue into a startup mode, and what the role will be of a contractor during that, which probably 90 days or maybe longer?
Yeah. No, that's an excellent question. In fact, a lot of the evaluation for this will need to be based on the cost of operation. Given the energy consumption of ESAL, the efficiency of the membrane treatment process is going to be a huge component of the evaluation. And so through the RFP stage, which is the next stage, we will need to think in detail about the commissioning period, the acceptance test, which is a formal test that the plant will be put through. But we will also be looking longer term. You know, there'll be a warranty period usually, which is very standard of a year. But we probably, with some of the key components like membranes and things, I mean, we may go out 7-10 years. So the warranty on some of the critical equipment would be very important, as well as the performance criteria of the processes. So there'll be a competition here on energy efficiency that will take place. And we'll factor in different vendors will have different technologies or different designs, and they may commit to different consumption of energy per acre foot of water produced. And one of the things is, it's great to say that when you bid the job, but you need to be held accountable over the long term to be able to deliver that performance. And so we'll be looking to have some performance bonding or other commitments by the guarantor that they can meet that performance criteria on the long run. And all of that stuff we need to work through and formalize in the RFP process. But it's an excellent point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Any other public comments on this item? Seeing none, we will close the public comment period. And I've been taking notes. Sounds like Arlene also, so we could. I'd be happy to read through these if that would help us get to the point of making a motion. I don't know, Rob, if there's anything else you want to say before I read through these. Okay, so we talked about getting information on compliance history with environmental laws, compliance history with respect to prevailing wage and other labor laws, and on both of those, the possibility of adding them to on page 18 and page 19 of that spectral scoring. We talked about taking out reference to LEED and putting in place energy efficiency and or reference to sustainable green designs. We talked about seeking history of firms that have developed projects that have a high degree of maintainability and adaptability to new technology. We talked about the history of number of change orders that would be design build firm initiated in previous projects. History of responsiveness to project after project completion. We you mentioned adding Chris Helms Consulting to the list of ineligible firms. Noted adding the Water Authority TAC to the do not contact list, and allowing contact to permitting agencies for the sake of permitting. So that would be the, I think we keep it general, it's probably just the county in this case, but maybe the Water Authority too. Sorry, not the Water Management District to a degree. Adding in a reference to the possible procurement of alternative power sources in that paragraph. I didn't catch the page number. Noting that 15 pages double-sided. Fixed the formatting on the headings. And the that local hire, and Cal Am is suggesting that we also add in the diverse hire, I forget what the technical term is, but in the point system on page 18 and 19. And that's what I have in my notes.
And the power was section 3.3.3 power supply.
3.3.3. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see anything else. I'd move the CDD document and approval with the 11 suggested amendments as outlined just now.
Second.
And before we take action on this, at Cal Am, I'd like to avoid a situation where you have to not follow one of those and then you get into a back and forth. Are there any of those that you think you can't work with?
I don't think there are any. Anthony, Rich? No. I think those are all good additions.
Okay. And I actually, by my computer count, is 12. which one you're trying to eliminate.
It's just I was using the new math, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, I know what I did. I combined two of them.
Okay. Well,
the tech and the...
Chris Helm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I think we're clear on what we're voting on, I'm into the record, and I'm going to send them to Arlene right now, so that is done. Okay, so we have a motion and a second on the table. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And passes unanimously. Thank you. We will. Do you want me to send this to Cal Am at the same time? That list that I just read, that'd be helpful.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay.
So I send it to Rob, Anthony, and Rich, and Catherine, as well as, so 12. This is obviously shorthand, but I think it gets the point across. Okay. We will now turn to item 3, which is develop plan for coordination with architectural design team. This is the recommendation under category B5 of the governance agreement, and I'll turn it to Rob to give a rundown of the process.
Sure. So
we're working.
At the last meeting, I briefly introduced that we've decided to try to go directly to the source of creativity, one of the best architectural schools in the country at Cal Poly, to have some students there kind of have a competition, a group kind of project to come up with architectural designs for the project. We need that as we process through the various permitting stages, so we believe it's a very creative but also very cost-effective way of getting architecture started. So so John Kilpatrick, who is a Cal Poly grad, has generously decided to lead this for Cal Am. He was voluntold. That's one of the phrases that we like to use here at the company. And so there's a process that's been established that it's actually kicking off on April 3rd where the students will come to see the site. They'll go up to Charlie Benson Road and see the site up there. They'll take a look at the, generally get acquainted with the area. try to get a feel for what they're dealing with, the environment. And then there are multiple steps, most of them occurring down at Cal Poly, where they will be looking for feedback from us. And so we're interested in, you know, in the spirit of this agreement, getting as much participation as we can from the public or from the committee. And we're looking for some assistance on this committee. And so just kind of high level, as I said, it starts on April 3rd. There's some concept studies, and they have presentations April. There's something happening on April 19th, May 10th. And then there's a preliminary design and analysis that will happen sometime June 12th to June 14th. And then the final kind of tweaking of the design August 1st to August 8th. And then the final presentations are scheduled on August 16th. So that's kind of the layout. I think we want to do it on that period to kind of keep in line with the permitting for the larger project schedule. And so that's kind of the overview. We did take your suggestion about trying to incorporate some engineering rigidity for cost control purposes into the architectural design. We think that is important. John has reached out to the professor that you mentioned, but I believe he's been traveling this week, so we haven't been able to connect yet. But we'll try to make that happen as well. And I think that's kind of the high level.
I have a question on that, because obviously you're transcending the summer session, so how is that going to pull together? Because most the design classes, engineering classes, everybody's out.
Yeah,
at the end of May, beginning of June.
There's two phases to this. So the first phase, they run it as a class, and all the students come up with initial design concepts, and they start to weed out some of those, and they focus on few, and then they finally focus on one. And at the end of the class period, they have one final design that they're looking at. Then into the summer period, there's a group of grad students that then take that and produce a final report from that final design. In that final report, that's what they'll be looking at: the specific building materials. They'll be looking at cost comparisons. If they're using different sustainable materials, how much does that impact project costs? So it's a two-phase approach that they're going to take.
So are the grad students going to be involved with some of the initial design students?
You know, I'm not sure if there are people that are in that class that are going to follow on into the summer, or it's a different group of students.
So you're wondering who will be attending them of
caliber.
Continuity.
Historically, if you have one group of students and you get to their final design and then another group simply takes it over, everybody has their own idea. So things have a tendency to
it's not like summer school.
Go in a different direction.
When you failed one year.
And are the engineering students going to be involved in the front end?
Yeah, we're talking to Alan Estes.
Or, yeah, talk to him.
And to see how he's going to coordinate. Jim Dorfler is the interim department head of the School of Architecture. Mm-hmm. So he'll be the one running the project, and I'll get those guys talking to see how they can incorporate the engineering cost elements. And I've talked to Jim a little bit about that. We're going to need some cost comparisons. So.
To add to that, so the Professor Jim
Dorfler, yes.
This was his approach to how to do this with a two-phase process. So we were kind of taking back what he's comfortable with. We certainly hear your point that a whole new set of students, how is that flow, but the professor kind of recommended it. This is how we would do it. So we're kind of
I think it's my understanding that it'll be people from the class, and they've done other projects this way. They have other examples of design work they've done for other developments, and they do it the same way.
Okay. So I think what we're looking for is we have some potential volunteers, but is one enough, or should we have others, or how can we make sure we get the good input in the process, I guess is the issue.
So when will a decision or a recommendation come to the governance committee? I guess it's a recommendation because it's before the CPC. It'll be in the August, mid-August timeframe.
It seems like there should be something ahead of that, maybe when they get it down to two or three projects, that there should be some review by the governance committee, just to say, you know, this seems to be the preference.
Yeah, right. I'm just trying to figure out what the end point is, and work back from there to figure out where else we may want to engage as a committee.
Well, you're saying that at the end of June, or whenever they get out of class, or at probably the beginning of June, they will have their one design. So really, if you back that up, we should probably be in the...
Well, it's, I mean, if you look at the process, so the original concept kind of will be presented April 19th. And then they'll present multiple solutions in May 10th. And
now when you based say present, are they presenting that to us, or they're just presenting it?
They need to present to somebody for
to feedback. Somebody.
So we can decide who, but we would... We want, you know, it'd be great to have you involved in that process.
I think that seems like it would be a presentation to the governance committee.
Yeah, so if we, now, I guess they budgeted for this to happen down there. Whether we could get them to come up here,
they don't know, John,
you'd have to work that out, I guess.
They're open to that. And so the opportunities for input into the project, there's four presentations, and a kickoff meeting, a kickoff site view. People can attend those, and that's where we start to give the students input, what we're looking for, what things are important to us. They want to talk to some of the stakeholders. And then there'll be four presentations where they'll kind of storyboard the different students what they've done. They're definitely open to having some of those up here in this area. I think logistically, when there's a lot of different projects, it might be easier to have it back down at Cal Poly because everyone's got all their stuff and their boards and what they're presenting. But we would definitely love, folks.
Well, maybe that's
the
case of when they're doing the multiple presentations, it would be down there. When they get it dialed into two or three, maybe it comes back up here.
So is the, John, would that be the, coming back here might be the June 12th to 14th where they're, you know, they're taking the feedback received on the 10th.
Yeah, the June 14th is that's a pretty good one. That's when they say, okay, this is one we're going to go, we're going to take this to 90%. Then at that 90%, when they're done with that 90%, then it's the summer students focus in and complete the report. So
But for somebody who's not an architect like me, would, you know, on June 12th, would I get to see something that would make sense to me, like a model or a schematic on a page?
Some renderings.
Rendering.
Yeah, probably rendering.
Would that happen on, you know, June 12th to 14th?
Yeah, June 12th to 14th. That would be, it would be a very understandable presentation at that point.
And that's when you've dialed it down to one?
Right.
But the May 10th is when you have multiple projects, so that would be an opportunity for the governance committee to actually say, this range of projects looks more the direction we're headed.
So John, let me just ask you about that, because on the 10th, it says we'll get multiple scenarios. The students will present multiple scenarios. We give them feedback. And then on the 12th of June, it says they're going to present, so from the May 10th meeting, they will present a single concept and bring it on the June 12th to 14th meeting, what it sounds like, right? So I guess
I'd rather see that selection.
There was choices to be
how
made.
How you get to the final one. Then be presented with the final one that they're already invested in.
Right. That's what I was thinking, on the May 10th, where you've got a range of projects, it would be nice to be able to say, you know what, we're kind of looking at these four or five projects.
Yeah.
You know, this is the direction that seems to be appropriate.
What, so if I give an overview of what the meetings are like, the first one is the site kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
Then the first presentation is a precedent study. So they go in and talk about, here's what other types of materials and architectural type treatments are being used at other industrial facilities, other water plants. Then, around the May 10th, May 17th one, that's when the students, they take that input and they come back and there's several different designs. That would be a good time to hone in on their input.
So, John, let's see if we can have that one here at this meeting. Have them present to us here.
So they're not doing this as teams, they're doing this as individuals to start out with.
They're starting out as individuals, and as they weed it down to fewer and fewer presentations, then everybody starts working on different aspects of that design.
Okay.
And then let's also have them come back once they've taken the feedback on the 10th, let's have them come back again on the June date to give us the final model. And then I guess I would just ask that there are some proposed meeting dates already out there that I guess we're working on.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if we could nail those down and then let them know, John, that, okay, these are going to be the dates, which I'm just looking at the calendar. I think we're going to be a week behind them, so more or less, right? So we're still working through?
Yeah. Just heard from a few people. There's nothing definite yet.
Okay. But,
that's great.
Okay.
So we'll have two, one in the mid-May and one in the mid-June time frame, and then a third one out in the middle of August time frame. I mean, we didn't talk in detail about that.
Yeah, we didn't get into the second. So what's happening in August?
The one in June. It would be good if the graduate students were part of that so that they get our feedback if they're going to take it and run with it.
If, in fact, it's a different team, yeah.
Okay. And then, John, what's happening in August after?
That's the final presentation.
Yeah, so on the June one, so that, you know, the May one, we've got multiple things. The June one, they're presenting, okay, we've narrowed it down to one. The August presentation, it's pretty much a 90%. Is this what we're comfortable with to go to the final report?
Okay. Rob, I'd just like to ask, how does that fit in with the proposal due date? Because my understanding, the idea is we take what these grad students do, issue it to the four proposers and say, okay, here's kind of what we want, so make this happen when you submit on September 17th.
Yeah. So let me answer that. Here's what I'm envisioning. So by the RFP go out date, we will have some concepts of what the architect students want, but not the final. So we will provide that as an exhibit to the RFP. Here's generally what we're looking at. Once the final report comes out in August, which is still a month before the due date, then that would be an addendum to the RFP saying, here's finally what the governance committee and Calhoun has agreed to is what we want. And they will take that to help price out their proposal. Remember, it's a design build, so they're going to see elements that they like and they'll price it out, but we're going to give them a flavor of what we're looking for. So that's going to be how it's going to be generated.
I mean, ultimately, it will be a concept proposal to them.
Right. And they'll tweak it to make it work for a detail plan because.
Yeah,
Dave. As the father of a fourth year architecture student, I would task John with going back to the professor to find out logistically whether they could come up for the May, because when these guys go to critique in studio and there's 30 of them or 40 of them, it may be easier to send six people down to San Luis than to have everybody come up.
I believe the design studios are still, 16?
Which building?
At Cal Poly. The design, because there would be one class, right? It's not all of the fourth year design students. It's
right.
One class, which I think is 16.
Yeah.
Normally.
Yeah, so we're checking out.
But yeah, logistically, it could be a lot of material that they'd have to haul up here.
Right.
Well, I'm not opposed to going down there if needs to be.
It's a great place to be.
Out of town for a day.
Two and a half hours down the road.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you just won't have a public meeting. That's
right.
Right. Well, you do that one down there, I guess.
Well, you could post it down there.
Just post it.
Yeah.
Where's the attorney?
There's no issue.
Need to worry about Brown meetings outside the county.
We really should attempt to have them here locally, because this is gonna be of importance to the community in terms of the aesthetics of the project. In terms of legal kinds of things, again, you really have to be specific in when you're going out of town. It needs to be a legitimate purpose, and I'm not sure this would qualify, because we're not looking at a piece of property or something of that nature. We're discussing legal matters.
So John, maybe we're gonna have to rent them a minivan or something like that. We'll have to figure that one out, it sounds like.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if they're gonna be comfortable making a, you know, a formal public presentation in this kind of venue for all of those different design steps. So if there's a requirement that this is a public meeting, we might limit that to one of the later projects.
I think it would be a good experience for the students to have a public meeting. It's a great career building.
You were just under Rob. He's a really easygoing guy, man.
But if they've done any models, it could be an issue.
Well, I think maybe limit the first one to, you know, just a couple boards. I mean, that would be more than enough to give a concept, or maybe one board per person per design. Because really, it's gonna be very conceptual at that point.
Okay.
And then when they dial it into one project is where they can present it however they want, a couple boards, a block model, whatever.
Let me, just as a formal matter, take it out to the public for comment. I'm not sure if I've technically done that. Anyone want to weigh in on this subject? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Okay, so we have a sketch of a plan. I'm not sure that we want to make it too rigid, because you're going to have to work with Cal Poly and...
Yeah, sort out the details as it goes.
And sort it out, but yeah. But I think, generally speaking, governance committee is going to want to try to meet here, because the point of the governance committee is to provide a way for the local public here to interface on issues that matter. And this is one that we expect that would be interesting. There may be, if there are parts of the process where you want an individual to go down, there always could be, you know, Jeannie, you could go down as an individual and report back, and that would be then helpful to the governance committee,
right.
And if it's helpful to the students.
Well, there might be some interim point at which,
if you want,
they would just want some more input or whatever, and you're going to provide them with basic square foot dimensions and
All that stuff.
Right.
So maybe what would be helpful is for the next meeting, I hope we'll have enough time to iron out all the schedule, the process, come back with that in writing, so it'll become public at that point.
Right, and we can see how that fits into the governance committee.
And fit it in with our meetings, yeah, that would be the other thing.
Okay, is that enough on this item? So we'll turn to discussion of items to be placed on future agendas. I think this is really an opportunity for CalAM to, if there are items that are going to need governance committee decisions or recommendations in the upcoming months, to let us know about that so we can begin scheduling.
Okay. Anything that comes to your minds immediately, guys?
Well, the only thing I can think of is we're going to need to discuss the draft RFP and contract in approximately 2 month time frame from that.
So if we're generally doing, Arlene, we were looking at the tentative meeting schedule that you sent out. Remind me.
Of course. One meeting a month, fourth Wednesday of the month, but that likely is not going to work out. We'll have to be looking at other dates.
Okay, but if we're looking at one meeting a month,
one
so we're
a month.
You'd be looking at the May meeting for that, middle of May.
Probably end of May. I think an internal date we were targeting roughly was around May 20th or so of providing the next CalAm notification, the formal step in the process with the draft documents.
Well, one thing just in terms of scheduling, if possible, and this is a point that Sue McLeod made last time at the last governance committee, is that to the extent that we want to be able to bring these items back to our respective boards, that there's a little extra scheduling. I think what you did this time around of providing an outline actually accomplished most of what we needed to accomplish. I was able to bring to the Water Authority Board the outline, and I feel like the Water Authority was able to weigh in substantively, even though they didn't weigh in on the full document. So bear that in mind, to the extent that you have an outline that you can share in advance, that would help our process.
Well, when is the authority meetings?
Going that far out, I don't.
I mean, they're not like on a regular.
Well, yeah. So we have one on that May 9th and one on May 23rd.
What are those dates? I'm sorry.
May 9th and May 23rd.
Are dates for?
For the Water Authority meetings. So if we held a governance committee the following week, the week of May 27th, that would be, sounds like to me, with your time frame, if you could get something the prior week, that way I could bring it to the Water Authority and get their input, and then have a governance committee on the following week.
So May 27th, is that? For some reason, that's sticking my mind as Memorial Day or something.
Yeah, I said the week.
The week of, okay.
Before Anthony brought up the draft RFP and contract, I think, Rob, you had said that we need to clarify the Cal Poly schedule and process and then look to fit it to the meeting schedule. Is that a formal activity, or is that going to be done offline where John firms things up?
Well, if we could nail down the meeting dates, I think we could give those to John to go to Cal Poly and work out. That might be the best way to go.
Okay.
I would guess they're more flexible than us in terms of their schedules, but maybe, I might be wrong about that. I don't know.
And we'll put it on the agenda for an April meeting just to update where we are with the Cal Poly process, so if he's got it worked out. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Well, the suggested meeting dates that Arlene had were the fourth Wednesdays, although I said the third Wednesdays would work better. For me, I could do the fourth, but third would work better.
We'll work out the schedule. I'll be sending it. I mean, unless you can commit to third Wednesdays.
Well, I was just going to. If we can commit to the next meeting, not necessarily the full schedule meeting, but for April, are we looking at the 17th versus the 24th? I could do either.
I can do the 17th.
This was at 2:00. I think I was able to do either. I could do either, I think.
I can do 2:00.
17th or the 24th.
Okay, so 17th. Dave can't do the 24th, so we'll do the 17th at 2:00 here, unless otherwise notified. And on that meeting, we will have a firmed up plan schedule for the Cal Poly interaction. What else is needs to be on that agenda?
Well, we should be able to report back on if there's any feedback on a workshop at GWR at that point. I would expect there'd be some response by that.
Yeah, I meant to mention this at the outset of the meeting. Last meeting, I was authorized to send two letters, one to William Mary, which I've done, and that should be circulated, just got that out today, and one to the PUC, which we have a draft of. I sent it to you, Rob, but
I don't think it came with the attachment, though, for some reason.
Oh, well, just one for you to give me a blank check. We're hoping to get that out today. It looks like we may not, but it's pretty straightforward. It's basically requesting what happens. Dave is correct that hopefully we'll have, we probably ask to see whether William Mary can come at the April. I think that would be helpful moving that forward. we have any response back from the PUC, we can.
And my advice with William, if you do get a response, is to try to sit down with him prior to the meeting, because he seems really ready to go. You know, they, before we even brought this up and had him come to the TAC, he's already been out with potential buyers, and so he's ready to go.
Okay, anything else? We will stand adjourned. Thank you.
So the question is coming up on the 3rd, paper 3rd.
You know what time we're coming on with the first?
You're going to head over to the Museum of Natural History, right? Is that where this is at?
Yes.
Okay. We'll see if they want to talk.
Nature. Cal, I stand for the master.
I think it's
good. As well as
Europe. Yeah.